Okay, good evening. Welcome back. Hope everybody had a nice Yom Tov. We're going to begin this evening, as we did last week, by just reviewing, very briefly, really just reviewing the basic principles and ideas that we introduced last time we met 2 weeks ago, and then continue on. So last time we spent most of the shiur discussing the different types of kalim, right, the different levels of utensils that may be containing liquids and their status on Shabbos. And just to quickly, I'm speaking to myself, not to you. I just want to make sure that I don't get stuck here. But just to quickly review the levels of kalim, we had a kli rishon shel gabei ha'esh, which means the first initial utensil which finds itself literally on top of the fire or the heat source, such as a pot of soup which is sitting on the blat, or a kettle, an urn that's plugged in, a crock pot. In this situation, we hold that nothing whatsoever, solid, liquid, cooked, uncooked, may be placed inside of a kli rishon shel gabei ha'esh. A kli rishon that has been removed from the fire, however, so as long as it still retains its temperature of the yad soledes bo, so the din is that it can still be mevashel, it still has the strength to be able to cook, according to the halacha, and so therefore the only things that we could conceivably place inside of a kli rishon that has been removed from the fire would be fully cooked solids. But anything which is either in liquid form or something that was not fully cooked prior to Shabbos may not be placed inside of a kli rishon that has been removed from the fire. A common example which we gave is placing noodles or matzo balls, things that have been cooked beforehand, inside of a pot of soup that has been, once again, removed from the fire, even if it's still very hot. We then spoke about Iroi Mekli Rishon, pouring the contents of a Kli Rishon before it actually comes to rest in a Kli Sheni. So as it is literally in flight, there is a Machlokes Rishonim as to whether or not the contents, as they are being transferred, have the capacity to cook or not. And what we assume a halacha, sort of a compromise, is that it can be mevasha kedei klipa, which means that it can cook just the outer surface of whatever it is that I'm pouring it on. And so therefore we try to avoid pouring anything from a kli rishon, once again, on top of anything that was uncooked, because even cooking the surface would be a problem. An interesting leniency that we spoke about, which emerges from this din, is that it would be permissible to pour boiling hot water from a kli rishon on top of a container that has, something which I'm looking to bring the temperature down a little bit. So for example, or actually raise the temperature a little bit. So if I have, let's say, a cold bottle of milk, I'm sorry? Yeah, so if I have a cold bottle of milk and I want to pour some hot water on it in order to raise the temperature a bit, that would be permissible. We then spoke about a kli sheni. The Gemara tells us that a kli sheni is not mevashel, that a kli sheni cannot cook, according to the halacha. We've already discussed, and we won't review why that is, in other words, whether that's a statement in halacha, or it's a statement in what we call Messias in reality, but either way, that's how we assume. The problem, however, we discussed is the fact that the Mishnah says there are certain things, which we call kali abishol, which actually can be cooked in a kli sheni, and we're not quite sure what those are. And so therefore, bottom line, we try to avoid placing things into a kli sheni on Shabbos, again, unless we know that they were previously cooked. With some notable exceptions, things that we know not to be among the kali abishol, I think the most significant of all, in my opinion, is water. Right? We mentioned that water is for sure not among the kali abishol, and that's why it's permissible to take water, even if it was not previously cooked, doesn't really make a difference, and pour it into a hot kli sheni. So, again, a very practical example that we spoke about was taking, let's say, an ice cube and putting it into a hot bowl of soup. Or again, using the example of a cold bottle of baby milk, a baby formula, and pouring hot water into there, sort of the reverse scenario, but all these cases are okay. We then spoke about a kli shlishi and the fact that the postman discussed whether or not there really is such a thing as a kli shlishi. Some argue there is no such thing. Kli shlishi is the same as a kli sheni, the same as a kli revi. Basically, once it's been transferred into a new keli, the status doesn't change. You can continue to transfer it ever and ever, but as long as it's still Yad Soledes Bo, it doesn't matter. And so therefore, we have to treat a Kli Shlishi exactly as we treat a Kli Sheni. However, we saw that Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuva felt, no, that a Kli Shlishi actually cannot be Mevashel at all, even Kali Abishal. And therefore, basically, Rav Moshe held that for all intents and purposes, you can pour in anything, stick anything into a Kli Shlishi, again, regardless of the temperature, and it's based on his ruling that we find that many people, not everyone, but many people do actually prepare fresh tea on Shabbos using tea bags, as opposed to those who would be machmir and only use tea scents which had been prepared beforehand, in which case, you know, one could rely on the, one can then prepare tea according to the more stringent views. We also discussed the issue of a ladle and how the status of a ladle is somewhat questionable because it's actually immersed typically into the Kli Rishon, and therefore it could be that if a person dishes soup out of a Kli Rishon directly, then the bowl of soup does not have the status of a Kli Shlishi, only a Kli Sheni, and that may affect what you may stick into it. We've discussed the concept of a Davar Gush, of a solid, hot piece of meat, let's say, which may still retain the status of a Kli Rishon even after it has been transferred from one utensil to another. This is just looking back on my notes. This is basically the major topics that we discussed last time. I hope that this was a helpful review. For those who are not here, it may have been overwhelming and a little confusing. And as always, I welcome questions before or after the shiur, just to make sure that everything is clear. And obviously, we'd be very concerned if there were any people who had any misconceptions or misunderstandings about what we've been said over here, so please feel free to seek any clarifications. So what I'd like to do tonight is the following. First of all, I want to spend just several minutes, not a lot of time, but just talking about some common examples of situations that will arise in the kitchen which the dinim will basically be affected by the principles that we just reviewed. And then talk about some other secondary issues that have to do with the concept of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, and then we'll move on to a completely different topic having to do with some of the rabbinic restrictions which apply to cooking on Shabbos. So we've just discussed the fact that there is something called the Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi, and the difference basically between all of them is certain things you can put in one and not the other. And we're using a rule, you know, previously cooked foods, but many people are not necessarily familiar with what has been previously cooked or not. Anything which has been cooked in your own kitchen, you know, it's been cooked. But if you buy certain foods that are processed beforehand, we don't necessarily know what's been cooked with not. So I'd just like to share with you several examples. And of course, you can ask questions if you have questions about your own examples you'd like to discuss. When it comes to salt, there happens to be a machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch, believe it or not, as to what the status is of a salt. The Mishnah Berurah concludes that our salt, which has been cooked as part of the processing, may actually be added to a Kli Rishon, even, which has been removed from the fire, because, again, it is considered to be previously cooked solid. There are certain gourmet salts, which you may purchase, perhaps, which are produced by solar evaporation of seawater, and actually are not cooked in production. And obviously they should not be added, perhaps even to a Kli Sheni, according to the second opinion Shulchan Aruch. So therefore we should try to, if we're using any specialty, you know, with these, you know, special gourmet salts, to identify, you know, how they have been processed and prepared, and be mindful of that. But regular table salt may actually be added to even a Kli Rishon that has been removed from the fire, certainly a Kli Sheni. Instant oatmeal is made by steaming fine-cut oats. In other words, not previously cooked. So in addition, sometimes flavored instant oatmeal may have some raw spices, such as cinnamon, which is added to give it flavor. So all things considered, hot water should not be added to instant oatmeal on Shabbos. Again, according to Rav Moshe, who says that Kli Shlishi is fine for everything, so it would be permissible to prepare instant oatmeal with a Kli Shlishi, although, and forgive me for just, you know, dropping this line and leaving it at that, there are potentially other malachos, other prohibited areas of malach on Shabbos, which could become an issue when preparing something like oatmeal, most significantly what's called lush, which is the malach of kneading. When you take a liquid and a solid and mix the two of them together and produce this new substance, that's called lush. There are ways that instant oatmeal could be prepared, which would, you know, circumvent that problem, but now we're not discussing that. But just keep in mind that for the purpose of bishul, instant oatmeal would be a problem unless it's prepared in this permissible fashion. Baby cereals, interestingly, you know, I would think the same as instant oatmeal. Looks the same, right? But actually, they are pre-cooked with liquid and then dehydrated and ground. And so therefore, from a bishul standpoint, again, leaving the question of lush aside again, such a product may be used, even with a klusheini. Baby formula and milk powder are pre-cooked in the processing and may also be mixed with hot water on Shabbos. Granulated sugar gets pre-cooked in its manufacturing process. So-called raw sugar is also cooked as part of the extraction process from the sugar cane. So all of these may be used with hot liquids on Shabbos. Many sugar substitutes, but not all, have been heated beforehand as part of their crystallization process. And so they could also be used as hot fluids on Shabbos. If you have questions on specific types, you may ask. I have to have in my notes that equal is actually heated as part of the process. I'm not sure that all are. So again, the real difference we're talking about over here is klisheni or klishlishi, or for one who would not typically put things into a klishlishi, then perhaps using it at all in a hot liquid on Shabbos. Yeah. Well, you can probably do a little research online if you want to find out about a specific product, how it's produced, and you can figure out whether or not if the answer is not obvious, I'm happy to help do a little research.
If they have the Hashkafa agency, wasn't that a Kusina?
Possibly. That's a good point. You may want it. That's a good point.
It's
you
not may. An actual product. Aren't they creating it?
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Right. Yeah. So again, I think that's a good suggestion. If there are any types of sweeteners and you're not sure as to how they've been produced, you may be able to get a more direct answer from calling the Hashgach agency, and they won't think you're crazy when you call either, as opposed to trying to find this information. But I suspect you probably can get most of this information from whatever the companies would, provide online. Okay. Yeah.
These things that are previously cooked, you said Kli Sheni and Kli Rishon on the fire?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Previously cooked salads. Okay. Yeah. So liquid sweetener. So again, so if it's, the heter to put something into a Kli Rishon, it has to be, it has to previously cook salad. So a liquid, honey, you cannot put into a Kli Rishon that has been removed from the fire. Kli Sheni, honey, good question. First of all, honey, how is honey produced? I don't know, did they heat it? Did they pasteurize it? I don't know what they did.
Yeah.
They
did?
Probably a liquid, right. Yeah. We all have our tea in a cliche, meaning what? You put the cup directly under the urn. That's a cliche. Right. I happen to know that there are people, believe it or not, who are sitting in this room right now who do not rely on Rabbi Shishid of a cliche. I'm not going to identify them because it's their business. But in other words, I'm speaking over here not in theoretical terms. There are people who try, anything they wouldn't put into a klishlishi, they won't put into a klishlishi. Now, there's another related issue, just to switch topics for a moment, to that which we've discussed, and that is that the Shulchan Aruch rules that, actually it's based on a Gemara and Beitza, that food that has not been fully cooked may not be stirred while it's on the fire. This is actually would probably be considered an Nisa D'Raisa. This would be a biblical prohibition of Bishul. It's what we call Kiruv Bishul. The truth of the matter is, if you don't stir it, probably going to cook anyway, but the fact that you are, speeding up the process by stirring it, that would be considered a biblical prohibition. So that is a big problem that people should be mindful of. This would be true even if the food has been removed from the fire. Again, if it's not fully cooked going into Shabbos, you may not stir it. The Beis Yosef actually quotes the opinion of the Kolbo, one of your Shonim, who says that this applies even if the food is fully cooked. Now that means that you should not be stirring food on the fire at all. Now, the Mr. Bruin, the Sharatim, doesn't know why that is. Says that doesn't make any sense. If the food is previously cooked, so what's the problem with stirring it? Right? It's previously cooked, so how can I go wrong? Any suggestions? It's a good question. Right? Okay, that's a good suggestion. So that's not exactly what the Rav explained, but the Rav offered one suggestion, which is based on the Rambam, who compares Hagasa, which is means stirring, to wringing out clothes after they've been washed. The Rambam compares the two of them, and the way the Rav explained that is that Hagasa is part of the cooking process. Just as wringing out clothes is part of the laundering process, this is part of the cooking process, and therefore it's called bishul, even if actually the food has been fully cooked. So it's not so much of a Maris Ayin issue, but that is really part of the process of cooking. And this explanation would explain why most folks assume that the prohibition of stirring previously of fully cooked foods would only be while it's on the fire itself. Once it's been removed from fire, you can't really call that part of the cooking process. But once it's on the stove, it's still on the fire. If you see a person doing this, that's an act of cooking. That's one explanation. Well, none of that's on the fire, right? You don't actually, you're not going to make, none of these things
on the fire.
Oh, we're talking about foods that's on the fire. Yeah. This is a food that has been cooked. I mean, this is like, you know, let's talk about cholent. Let's talk about cholent. I mean, that's like a good example. So you have a cholent that it's cooked. It's cooked. So stirring it, we're saying right now, would be a problem. So we're asking why. It's fully cooked.
Yeah, but if you cook something that's already cooked, it's
mutter,
right?
Right, so good. So that's
why is it mutter?
That's my question. So the Rav explains that stirring something that's on the fire, that's an act of bishul. That is part of the bishul process. That is part of the bishul process.
But if I cook something that's already bishul,
what do you mean if you cook something? What? Give an example. If I take salt and I pour it into a pot that's removed from the fire, that's not an act of bishul. That's seasoning. If I put noodles in, that's not bishul, that's pouring noodles into the soup. That's the way the Rav explained it conceptually. That when there's something on the fire and you're going like this, that's called cooking. That's one of the acts of cooking. And so therefore, the fact that the food is previously cooked is not really...
So if I take something that's fully cooked and I drop it into one of the pots.
While it's on the fire? Can't do that.
No. What is that?
It's interesting. Last week we said that looks like cooking. But I would add to that right now, it could be that you can say as well, you know, if we really want to apply this concept of the Rav Hagasa there as well, that's an act of cooking. Taking something and putting it into a pot that's on the fire, that's an act of cooking even if the food is cooked. Again, this is a bit of, you know, this is a lumdish twist which may confuse us unnecessarily right now. The bottom line is, we said last week, and I was very clear about this, you may not, I have no problem repeating it, but as I want to be very clear, under no circumstances whatsoever, you see, I'm excited about this halacha, because there are very few things that I could say to you under no circumstances whatsoever, nothing says, no exceptions. So far, pretty much every rule has an exception. So this is the rule without an exception. You may not, under any circumstances whatsoever, put any food into a pot that is on the fire and shouts. Have a good night. Right? That's it. And that's not going to change. It doesn't matter why. It's right? So last time we said, well, you know, because it looks like cooking. Now we're saying maybe you can even say that it's an act of cooking, even though you're right. In Bishul HaKabishul would say it's not, but so even though you're not cooking, it's an act of cooking. Okay. There's another possibility over here, which may be, even if it's far-fetched, it may be a little more, you know, palatable at this point. And that is that something, you know, when you look at a cholent, let's say, and you assume it's previously cooked, you don't really know what's going on deep in that cholent, right? Right? Yeah, you know, you think it's cooked, but who knows what's going on in there? So because of the fact that, you know, things may not be as fully cooked as you think they are, the haraya, isn't that why most people stir? I mean, again, that's not a question that I can answer. I don't really know why people stir the pot. I never stir the pot at all. But people who stir pots, you know, it could be that that's why they stir it, because they know that there are things, you know...
Well, one reason to stir it is not to overcook, not to cause something.
That's true. It's not necessarily the only reason. But, so the fact of the matter...
Is causing something to burn to a crisp more than just being adequately cooked?
That's a good question. If something which has been fully cooked, probably not, because at that point you're really just ruining it. So this is the other suggestion. This is brought down by the art school book, The Shabbos Kitchen. He says that there could be that the reason for the skumra is that there could be that there are things that are things that are in there that are not as fully cooked as you think they are. Now, again, this prohibition, as we mentioned, just applies when food is on the fire. So it does not apply to a completely clear liquid. It would only apply to semi-dense, you know, solids. So like a chowder would certainly apply, and even a hearty chicken soup. But a plain, clear chicken soup, you could stir. You should not stir while it's right on the fire. I mean, that's a, you know, that would be a chumrah, but I would encourage people not to stir things that they're right on the fire. But once it's been removed from the fire, certainly it's not a problem at all. It's just a question. If you did, there's no problem with it. I think it'd just be confusing for some, and I could see it definitely leading to. I don't know. I'm not interested in making my own gazeras over here. But I think it's best to avoid stirring things that are literally on the fire. But the bottom line is that this prohibition does not apply to actual clear liquids. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. That would. Yeah. That would be acceptable, although I mentioned last time, and we're still not going to get to this tonight, we're going to talk, when we talk about the blech, about different zones on the blech. So,
and the crack part, when you're talking about on the fire,
while it's in the base.
In the base also.
Yeah.
Even if it's on warm.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to crock pots, we have to sometimes make an exception to this thing, because not everybody has a crock pot that has a removable, insert. Sometimes it's just one piece. So some would say, I'm not going to use that on Shabbos. But we're not going to say that such crock pots are prohibited for use. That's the situation where it is really necessary for some stirring to go on, just for the purpose of removing the contents from the chowder and pot, and that's something which is permissible. One other sort of added consideration over here is the question of covering a pot which is on the fire. So some also say that that's a form of kirov vishal, just like stirring, so too covering a pot. But over here, we find that the poskim, for the most part, are making if the food is fully cooked. So, and fully cooked means to the best of your knowledge. But if you have a chowder, let's say, which you know is not fully cooked, so if it takes the cover off Friday night, it's a problem. I mean, you can take the cover off, you can't put it back on. That would be also, and again, we can understand that. The idea is that once you remove the cover, so it's going to take the food longer to cook. And now by covering it, you're once again speeding up the process, even if that's not necessarily the intention at that particular point in time, so that would be a problem. So before you remove the cover of a crock pot, make sure that, make sure it's fully cooked, before you do that. Not necessarily. We'll have to talk about how much money we get there. Yeah. If it's fully cooked, we're saying yes, you can. Yeah.
If it's not, can you lift it up?
No, if it's not fully cooked, you can't put it back down.
No, I'm saying three people.
But you can't put it back down if it's not fully cooked. The whole, right?
It is fully cooked. Can somebody hold it while somebody stirs?
If it's fully cooked, someone hold it and someone else stir.
Right.
If it's off the fire, yeah. We're saying that once it's off the fire, you can stir it. Yeah, if you know it to be fully cooked. If it's not fully cooked, no, it doesn't matter if it's on the fire or off the fire. So let's just review. I'll just try to review very quickly the rules that we just said, so nobody should be confused. A pot of food which is not fully cooked may not be stirred while it's on the fire, and it may not be stirred off the fire. It doesn't matter if you're holding it, someone else is holding it. Doesn't matter if it's on the floor. None of that matters because it's not fully cooked. I mean, that's seriously, because that's one of the things that people sometimes do. None of that's not going to matter over here because the fact of the matter is the pot is very hot. You know, it's probably, way more than you have to let it. And we're not going to allow you to stir it at all, whether it's on the fire or off the fire, because that could be potentially a real act of vishal. Once the food is fully cooked, so now we're going to differentiate between on the fire or off the fire. On the fire, you should still not stir it. We said it could be, because you never know. It could be that it's not really fully cooked. Or, as we explained, another possible way of understanding it's an act of vishal. However, once it's been removed from the fire, you would be permitted to stir something which you know to be cooked, to the best of your knowledge. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions before we go on? Yes?
So if you have one of those pots in your crock pot, the removal, when you're ready to stir, move it from there into a serving bowl. Do you have to take it out?
So it's best to take it out of the base. If it's a one-piece thing and you can't take it out of the base, then it's permissible to do it. But otherwise, it's best to take it out. You should remove it from the base. Because that would be sort of like stirring it while it's still on the fire.
But you know it's fully cooked. But, and you're taking the whole
but we said you shouldn't stir things that are on the fire, even if you know they're fully cooked. No, so I said once you take it out of the base, it's for sure again. Right. Yeah, I'm just saying once it's still in the base, you should, as long as it's still in, you shouldn't. Okay? We said that if food that is not fully cooked, that is on the fire, may not be covered. It can't cover it. So if the cover was removed, it can't be placed. If there never was a cover, you can't cover it. You can only cover pots that have food that have been fully cooked beforehand. Okay? Yes? No, not necessarily. For this discussion, it doesn't make a difference.
Opening up to see whether it's ready?
Yeah, because this is not a question of Achazara. This is really potentially a real question of Bishul over here. It doesn't matter, you know, none of that matters. The only question of putting it down, holding it, that's going to become an issue later when it comes to the Rabbanan issues. Over here, we're still talking about possibly, you know, actual cooking. Again, this is not far-fetched over here. Cooked challen or not fully cooked challen. I mean, I'm sure everybody will agree with this statement, right? If the cover's on, it's going to cook quicker. Therefore, covering it is speeding up the cooking process. Speeding up the cooking process is an act of cooking. Cooking is an issue raisa. End of story, right? No? You don't like it?
I remember back in Yeshiva, Friday night,
it was fully cooked. It was fully cooked.
No, but we didn't empty out the pot.
You didn't have to empty it.
For ourselves, put the cover back on it.
You're at different levels of fully cooked. Fully cooked doesn't mean that it's going to get ruined if it's on the fire for another 10 minutes. It just means it's cooked. It's ready to go. It's not like Michael Benjamin's story. It's really, it could be served. At this. Otherwise, you wouldn't have taken from the pot, right? We're talking about like a... Oh, it's yeshiva, I forgot. Well, I remember this as well. We used to, but if I remember correctly, I remember in Moshe Akola, they used to serve from the shul on Friday night, and there they actually would have, you know, you'd have a whole team of people that would hold it, because it would be removed from the fire. But at that point, listen, the shul was ready to be served. They're going to serve from the same shul the next day, and it'll be even better at that point, but the shul was ready to be served at that point.
So you can't drink cover?
So you can. You can, because it's been fully cooked.
Mm-hmm. Because
you took it off the fire. The case that we're talking about. Yeah, the case is it's been taken. When in yeshiva, you know, now you're being deposed right now. In yeshiva, did they take the shalom off the fire? Yeah, okay, but it didn't go off first. So that's the difference. Okay, let's go on. You think that was an exciting topic? How's this one?
Shabbos morning. Shalom's ready to go, certainly. You take the cover, it's the crock pot, it's still in the base.
Mm-hmm.
You lift off the cover, smell it, say, wow, smells great, you cover
it. Yeah.
On the base.
On the base. Yeah. Okay. Okay. You know those urns? Okay, the urns that have the water level indicators. You know those really cool water level indicators? Oh, don't worry. That would be a good time to go to the bathroom if anybody needs to. So some have raised a concern, a very interesting concern. You know, some people have nothing to do with the time, so they should look at those urns. And they say that's such a cool feature. It's got the little wet water level indicator, which is so helpful because it lets us know how much water is left in the urn. But it may do something else. When you fill up an urn, right, for the first time, so, right, the water gets divided. Most of the water goes into the urn itself and becomes immediately heated, right? It's actually cooked. And then you have, you know, the lucky water. The lucky water gets to, you know, spend some time in the water level indicator, where it's nice and cool.
Why do you think that?
I don't. That's, I said some have raised the concern. So hold on a second. So if that's true, let's assume for a moment that that may be true. So something very interesting happens, as you can all see already. As you take out water, the water that's in that water level indicator then gets goes into the, it mixes up with the other hot water and gets instantly boiled. So,
except it won't boil unless it's on boil, otherwise
it's going to get boiled anyway because it's boiling. I mean, the water itself in the urine is boiling already. It's already boiling.
And then it stops cooking. It just kept warm.
But it's hot. It's got to let it. Okay, so that's called visual. Taking water.
If you added more water, you open the top and added more water,
mm-hmm.
unless you push the button that says boil again.
Doesn't matter. Even if it's on
pull. It's not going to be just the rain.
Of course it will be. A little water, a little cold water that you mix into a boiling hot urn, of course it will. It'll become, you have to let it go instantaneously. I think that's, you know, I can't give you the equation, but I think, you know, that's...
In any case, I would argue that the water that's in that little indicator is also hot.
Okay, so the bottom line is, it's brought down in the Sefer Lama Tes Melachos. I'm bringing this to your attention because you may have heard of this before, and some people, you may have children come up from Israel and said, I'm sorry, but you can't use that urn anymore. And you may have been concerned. Maybe this is an issue. So I'm actually going to tell you the good news. The good news is that in the Sefer Lama Tes Melachos, they bring down in a footnote there, in the name of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that it is permissible to use such an urn. Some of the reasons to be lenient is, number one, the water may have been cooked already. It's not clear. This is what we call psikreishis lo nichle. We mentioned this last week, this concept, that even if it's true that it's going to get cooked up, that's not my intention. And that when I push the lever down in order to, you know, dispense water, I'm not interested in seeing to it that water goes in. It's what we call a grumma, perhaps. These are some of the reasons that are mentioned. This remains in our focus. Not everybody was agreement, or else it wouldn't have been the subject of a footnote. Mm-hmm. And so therefore some people choose to fix their urns by basically plugging this valve up so that it's not an issue. Somebody asked, what about an urn with the Shabbos mode? I don't think an urn with the Shabbos mode necessarily means that they address this problem. I find that, utensils, appliances or anything like that with come with Shabbos mode, doesn't mean anything other than what it says it means. In fact, and I don't want to get sidetracked right now, but the entire concept of a Shabbos mode oven is somewhat of a bizarre concept because if you look in the instruction manual, it says how you could use it on Yom Tov, not on Shabbos, but they chose to call it Shabbos mode as opposed to holiday mode, which is obviously very confusing and I think a big mikshel. I've never been... Right, that it shuts that down. Right. Yeah, I understand. But I'm saying, so they may offer other features as well, but you shouldn't assume Shabbos mode, therefore, it's, black kosher. Okay. Hot water vaporizers. There are times when people use those. Obviously, you cannot add cold water to a hot water vaporizer. Doing so would be vishal deraisa. It's literally cooking the water. According to many poskim, however, you may add hot water to a vaporizer if it's currently operating, and the water is coming directly from a Kli Rishon. So in a situation where somebody must make use of a hot water vaporizer on Shabbos, you would be permitted to take, let's say, water from an urn or from a kettle that's still hot and in the Kli Rishon and pour it directly into a vaporizer that is operating at the moment. So I'm not going to turn it on. I'm just going to add more fuel to it, so to speak. That would be permissible. Cold water vaporizers actually can be used, and it's not a problem of Zora. One of the melachos on Shabbos is called Zora, not Zorea, which means to plant seeds, but Zora is... winnowing, but could be applied to other situations of perhaps dispersing little droplets of water. It's not going to be an issue in this case. So bottom line is hot water vaporizers should not be used unless there's no problem with using it if it's plugged in and turned on before Shabbos, but you shouldn't put any cold water into a hot water vaporizer. The last topic I want to discuss before we shift gears completely is the question of, yeah?
Is that using that same logic that you just said,
that you can do. That's called. That would be the same thing. That you can do. Yeah, people do that sometimes. The chalon looks a little dry, i.e., it's fully cooked, and then some. So it is permissible to then to take some boiling hot water and transfer directly to the chalon pot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't really matter from what clee. In other words, as long as... Great. Well, again, so you know, everything opens up. We'll open up a whole can of shell in here. Okay, let's just right. The issue of klirishon, klisheni, klishi, that's only relevant when I'm putting something into it. When I'm pouring something from, it doesn't really matter, honestly. So if I take water that is Yad Soledes Bo, I can pour it directly into a boiling hot shulchan. On the fire, no, it has to be off, so it should be lifted first. Right, yeah.
You lose power,
yeah. You could use the water, right, for several reasons. For several reasons you could use the water. And that's not so uncommon scenario, which, you know, happens from time to time. People lose their power, and the power goes back on. So water in the urn, for sure, you can drink, even if it cooled down completely in the interim. Okay. The last topic, also somewhat of an uncomfortable topic, perhaps, for some, is the question of the use of tap water on Shabbos. I make no assumptions whatsoever in terms of what people do in their own homes. I'm just going to tell you, you know, what the halacha is, and if anybody wants to discuss this privately, I'm happy to discuss. But bottom line is, to the best of my knowledge, I don't know if there's really anything to discuss here, but it would be prohibited on Shabbos to turn the hot water tap on Shabbos unless you have some special arrangement, plumbing arrangement, contraption, some bypass feature in your house. Some people have that. A couple of years ago, they had this very popular appliance, the Shabbat. We actually had it here in Shul. I don't think it exists anymore. Here in the Shul, I'm saying, I don't think.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It is? You still have it? Oh, look at that. Okay, wonderful.
We can shower here,
huh? Right. But unless you have some special arrangement, it's very simple. When you turn on the hot water in your house, so hopefully, if the hot water, you know, valve and heating system is working properly, that's going to send a message automatically to the hot water boiler that we need to replenish the supply, and cold water is going to be automatically fed into the hot water heater and instantly cooked right away. And so therefore, even though, again, you're going to say it is a grumma, and that's true, but on Shabbos we, first of all, I'm not sure it necessarily would be defined as a grumma, but even if assuming it is, it would not be proper to do that. In a situation where a person in the home is sick, even we're talking about a chol she'ein bo sakana, nobody's, God forbid, in any dangerous state, but a person who is sick and in need of hot water for whatever purpose, even to take a bath, let's say, if that's called for a young child. So there is room to be makel over here because of the question of rum and others. But normally, just to use the hot tap on Shabbos is something that should be avoided in all situations. Unless, once again, you have some special, you know, contraption in the house. Interesting, I don't know if it applies to anybody here, but some posts can discuss whether or not there's room to be lenient in an apartment building, you know, because an apartment building, and it may depend on the size of the building, I don't know if this is true of two-family homes, if you have a building that has, you know, 30, 40, 50 tenants, in all likelihood, at any given point in time, people are using the hot water, and it's probably just running continuously. It's not clear necessarily how we would, you know, how we'd rule in that situation, but certainly for one who's living in a, you know, in a home, the hot water tap should not be used on Shabbos. You can take water from a kettle urn and place it in a large basin and use that to wash dishes. There are other ways that you can perhaps creatively come up with a little bit of hot water that you can use, but to actually turn on the hot water on Shabbos would be a problem. Turning on the hot water on Yom Tov is completely fine, assuming that there's some need. It doesn't have to be food-related, just to wash your face in warm water. That would be permissible on Yom Tov. On Shabbos, you should not do that. Yeah?
What if you had turned off your hot water heater before?
So turning off the hot water wouldn't necessarily solve the problem. Because what?
If you
turn off the cold water feed, that would solve the problem. But turning off the boiler itself, it's still going to stay hot for a long time. So if it still feeds cold water in there, even if the flame is not going to go on, it's still going to become automatically cooked. That's kli rishon, with water that's yad soledes and cold water is going in, so that's going to be a problem. But if you can turn off the cold water feed, you know, just check with your, you know, plumber first, make sure that you won't break it. I know a person who once broke his parents' hot water heater. I'm not going to say who it was, but trust me.
Oh, after knowledge.
What did we say over there? The Pesuk Reish Lo Nichalei over here, it's not a Pesuk Reish Lo Nichalei. You definitely want, that's what you want it for.
We want the hot water that's coming out. The fact that cold water is coming and cooking,
no, it's not, no, that's not called Lo Nichalei. That's Nichalei. You want, that's exactly what you want to happen. The fact that you don't want it to happen right now, I don't know if that makes much of a difference. There we said it's possibly previously cooked anyway, right? We saw a whole group of people over here that insisted that even the water in the water level meter is really cooked, but that's not going to be the case over here. All right. Yeah.
It doesn't matter if, let's say, you have a dishwasher and it's set prior to Shabbos to go on during Shabbos.
Well, that's a completely separate discussion. They're laughing. I don't know why. I'm not. It's a serious question. I'm giving a serious answer. It's a completely different discussion. I'm happy to address that topic. I don't want to address it right now because it requires, you know, just talking from several other different angles. If you remind me, I'll make sure that before we conclude our final shiur, that we'll talk about that topic, which is not really a bishul shaila. Although you could argue maybe there would be some additional questions over there. But the question of setting a dishwasher on a timer to go on Shabbos. There are several potential issues which need to be considered. But so at the moment, I'll say, you know, we'll have to hold off and discuss that later. Okay. We're about to start a completely new topic. So before doing so, I just want to make sure that no other outstanding questions or things that should be clarified. Yeah.
I had bought a new crop. You have to put for how many hours you want it to be on, and then it stops and it goes. I put it there, there's something on, and then it stops and it goes to warm.
Okay, but even warm is very hot. I mean, warm is going to be over 110 degrees.
No matter what, you take it out.
Yeah. Yeah, warm is going to probably be, you know, 250, 275, something like that. It's going to be pretty hot. Okay. So now we're going to discuss some of the Dina de Rabbanan, the rabbinic prohibitions associated with Bishul. It's now 9:14. You know, we never go past 9:30. So we're just going to begin this discussion tonight, and we'll pick up where we left off next week. So we know that, let's just take a step back over here and just consider the obvious fact that many of us have thought to ourselves from time to time, and that is that if all my food is cooked before Shabbos, so then there really technically should be no problem whatsoever of doing whatever I want on Shabbos because I can't cook something that's been previously cooked. And we've addressed that question more or less in the past. Additionally, there should certainly be no problem whatsoever of putting things, let's say, on an open flame going into Shabbos, regardless of whether or not it's cooked or not, because why should that be any different than turning on light before Shabbos and just continuing to, you know, to sit in the light when Shabbos begins? We're already used to setting things in motion before Shabbos and allowing them to continue to operate on their own, and that's generally fine without any problems whatsoever. When it comes to the Malach of Bishul, however, so Chazal were especially concerned that for reasons which, you know, perhaps even more prevalent and obvious then, but I think are certainly of concern of us today, the reasons that there's much more concern about people coming to err and to perhaps unintentionally, either because they're unaware of the din or because they're just forgetful in the moment, come to inadvertently be Mechal HaShabbos. And so therefore, obviously, min haTorah, from the Torah law, there would be no prohibition whatsoever of leaving uncooked food on a fire before Shabbos. It doesn't matter how cooked it's been, should be no problem, because again, it's no different than turning on a light and walking away. Chazal were concerned, however, that there are common errors which may result, and the way they characterized their concern in a general sense, it was an expression, that Talmudic expression called Shema Yechate B'Kecholim, which means maybe a person will come to soak the coals. Now obviously, soaking the coals over here, we may use that expression sometimes in a figurative sense. There it's meant literally, right? The most common heating contraption in the days of Chazal was what we would call, what they call the kira. You know, it's not quite an oven, it's not quite a stove. Maybe if you go camping sometimes, and you cook in the outdoors, you can actually cook on something that is very similar to a kira. But a kira was usually something that was placed in the ground, perhaps built into the ground itself, which had an area for coals and for wood on the bottom. And then the food would usually be suspended on top of that fire, and the heat source was not, was not gas that was coming in from a line from the outside, which you could turn it on, it would continue uninterrupted for days, if not longer. It was not the nice, convenient, set of charcoals, which you just light and walk away, and it takes care of itself. But firewood, which would then char and turn into coals, and it required maintenance. And if you didn't maintain it properly, it would go out prematurely. It would, the heat would not, spread the way you'd want it to. And so therefore, there was a real concern that if people put uncooked food on fires going into Shabbos, there's a concern of Shema Yichata B'Kachalim, which involves, by the way, not just one malacha, but two malachos. One malacha would be Bishul, the food's on the fire. The other one would be the malacha of Mavir, of, in that case, not lighting a fire, but soaking a fire. And in that sense, just as we mentioned before, the Kira Bishul, that speeding up the Bishul process, is an Isser Bishul. So too, soaking a flame in that case would also be a problem of Mavir. Again, this may seem far-fetched to us, but remember that we may take for granted already, because there are so many precautionary measures that we already have in place, which minimize confusion, and we don't really know what the big deal is, but we can appreciate this. Now, there was a somewhat of a complicated machlokes, which is found in the Mishnah in the beginning of the third parak of Masechet Shabbos, between the Hananya and the Rabbanan. According to Hananya, the first opinion in the Mishnah, once food has been cooked to the shear of Michael Ben Yusai, that's a term that we introduced in the first year, which meant either third cooked or half cooked. It was not completely cooked, but cooked enough to be edible if someone was on the run. So Hanani felt that once food has been cooked to that level, there's no concern of all of Shema Yechata B'Kachalim, which means Hanani felt that if you have food that is already, let's say, halfway cooked going into Shabbos, you could put it on open flame, and there's no concern whatsoever, because there's no need. It's basically on its way, and it's just a matter of time before it'll be done. You could leave it. The Rabbanan, however, were concerned that even in a situation where food has been, cooked to that level, there's still a concern of Shema Yechata B'Kachalim, because some people are very picky and they want their food just right. And unless it's at the point of Mitztamig V'Ralo, which means you continue to leave it on the fire and it's actually going to get worse, right? It's going to get dry and it's not going to taste as good. So then the Rabbanan said you should not put food going into Shabbos on an unopened flame. So here you have machlokes in the Mishnah, and it's not resolved at that point in history. And actually, this debate, believe it or not, continues even through the period of Shulchan Aruch itself. So if you look at Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, and the Ma, up until even the more contemporary posts in the Bir Halacha, so it's not clear actually how we paskin and what exactly is the right position to follow. The bottom line is, just to minimize any confusion from the outset, there's a way to avoid this problem entirely, and that is cover the fire. Now, covering the fire today is a little different than what Chazal prescribed. Chazal prescribed what was called grifa or ktima. Grifa or ktima meant either removing the coals or covering the coals. Again, because they weren't talking about the sort of cooking appliances that we have today. So if you remove the coals, obviously there's no concern whatsoever that you're going to soak them. There are no coals to soak. If you cover them as well, it's unlikely that you come to soak them for two reasons. First of all, the flame has already been diminished. And there's what we call a heker. There's a reminder there at all times, oh yeah, it's Shabbos. We're not talking about a person of a year who's going to violate Shabbos and Mazed. If so, we don't have to have this discussion. There's nothing to discuss. We're talking about a person who wants to do the right thing, but, we'll forget from time to time. Now, we don't deal with coals today. We deal with flames, typically, that are on either a range, a stovetop, or in the oven. And the way we deal with that is by covering either the fire or covering the knobs, or covering both. And again, right now I'm just introducing this in a general sense, and we'll go over some more of the details next week. But the general prohibition over here that we're talking about is what's called an halacha shihia, which literally means to have food that is remaining on a fire that's not fully cooked going into Shabbos. If the fire is an open fire, uncovered, then there potentially could be an issue. To be clear, if the food is fully cooked going into Shabbos, then there really is no problem. And it would be acceptable to keep food on an open flame going into Shabbos. And so therefore, if you have, let's say, a pot of chicken soup, and it's fully cooked, You don't need a black if you don't intend to put anything else on the Chayim Shabbos. That being said, I will say that, to my knowledge, you know, the Minhag Yisrael is generally that we always use the black on Shabbos. If that's not the way it was in your home, I'm not saying you have to do it that way. If you see someone who doesn't do it that way, you don't have to blow the whistle. But I'm just letting you know that, you know, to my knowledge, I think people generally, you know, going into Shabbos, assuming they're using the self-tap. If you're not using the self-tap, there's no need to put a blech on there at all. I'm sure that people do that. I'm sure that people put a blech on this just because it's Shabbos, you should have a blech. You know. But there's no reason for that whatsoever. But if the fire is going to be on, so the minhag is to cover it. But to be clear, if the food going into Shabbos is fully cooked, there's no need to cover it. Obviously, you would then be 100% prohibited from putting anything on the fire after that point. There'd be nothing to discuss whatsoever. But even if, let's say, you're eating out Shabbos lunch, or it's just Friday night, and all I have is soup, everything else is warm, it's in the oven, I'm eating cold, whatever it is. So technically, if the soup is fully cooked, that would be permissible. Any questions?
Are you allowed to cover the fire after, so you don't have to open
the
overnight?
That's a good question. So you would be allowed to put a blech on a fire if you didn't do it beforehand, assuming it's one of those. It's a blech that, to your knowledge, will not turn orange if you put it on. I understand, but some people have different types of blechs, and if it's covered with foil, let's say, then that's something that should not be done, especially if the foil will come in direct contact with the fire. You may recall in the first year we mentioned that cooking flies not only by food, but even by metals or anything like that, something that is going to be, you know, when there's some transformation that takes place. So if you take foil and you put it in the fire, you see it turn a glowing red and sometimes actually, you know, becomes incinerated in front of your eyes, that would be a problem.
That's
but
it's turning orange and it's glow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can't have it covered in foil.
You should. Well, you can, but you shouldn't put that on Shabbos itself. You can have a blech covered in foil that you put on the fire before Shabbos. That's okay.
Yeah.
Some, right, some things. Some blechs, right. I don't think all blechs are made of the same thing. So a tin blech, you know, may actually glow. So you have to take a look at the blech. Obviously, you want to try this before Shabbos to see what kind of blech you have. I'm at a point right now where I think it would be, you know, wisest to stop here, because the next, you know, if we continue, you know, we're going to have to stop at a more uncomfortable place. So even though it's 9:24, we're going to finish a few minutes early. Next week I have a wedding. I knew that before I scheduled this year, so therefore I did not. It actually says that there's no shear next week, so we're scheduled to resume 2 weeks from tonight. Which